when you have daycare centers, what's your child? No, one of the things that's most upsetting to me, I think, are the children. And, I mean, I know this wasn't brought up, you know, that wasn't the focus of the film, but the children themselves and what is happening, they're like living in two different worlds. And the problems that are arising, no one is meeting, you know, those needs at all. And I know PS2, the one on Henry Street, you're more familiar with that daycare center. In the last 5 weeks, there have been 3 rapes. And these are 12-year-old girls, by the way, that have been raped, you know, in the project area. What I'm trying to say is that the question of sexuality, as you brought out, is never spoken of in the home. They have all these questions. No one's meeting their needs at all as to what is happening. Not only between gender, you know, that question, but even between why do parents act the way they are, why American culture is promoting this kind of life, and they're cool. I mean, totally. I wish somebody would say something about the children and their needs.
First of all, to divide the issue, because to connect rape and sexuality in one sense, I take serious objections to rape as a violent act.
Well, true.
Nothing to do with the
I actually, it was two thoughts on my part, and I'm trying to get both of them out so other people could bring up other questions. No, absolutely, I agree with you. I was just trying to say that I know a lot of the children have been asking questions about sexuality and even gender. Why do the boys do such and such, and we can't, you know, kind of thing, as far as gender is concerned. And then, you know, sexuality, or why, you know, like Kanye, she's a young, Kanye is 12, and she's been here from Hong Kong for 6 months. And why can't I take off my shirt, you know, on the playground like the boys do, you know, kind of thing. I mean, it's a very simple questions. And even, like, she just began her period, like, a month ago. And the questions of sexuality, no one has ever answered those. Who she is as a woman. And she is just, she's totally, you know, she's just full of questions. And her mother won't answer them. I mean, you know, there's just no communication. Because, of course, I feel, I mean, this is just my own intuition, living with the family and knowing so many other families, it's just never brought up. And I think with children, it's a way to begin. It's a way to build. And, you know,
that is a real problem with age kids.
Oh, no, but I mean, just my own personal experience. And since we're...
I don't know if you're aware of the Pearls series.
I saw one, yeah, and I can't remember which one it was.
Well, your issue brings to mind the theme of one of our other films, which is Chinese Children.
Oh, no.
And it was filmed in New York City. Actually, at Henry Street.
Really?
Yes, is it PS2?
Well, this is Pike and Henry and Pike. No, I think it's another one, yeah, further down.
And I guess we focused on 2 Chinese American teachers who are trying to do something about the very problems that we talked about. Trying to provide a history for the students to identify. Mm-hmm. Fill in the gaps,
mm-hmm.
you know, in
regular
education.
Because one other thing besides the children, well, when I did volunteer, I don't want to take that with someone else. Something I should go on. I don't know. Okay, when I volunteered teaching English at CPC about 3 years ago, that was right when they were just beginning the immigration, Southeast Asian immigration. And of course, they were very curious as to what it was to be American. And I noticed, really, within the short period I was there, they were trying to, and you know, reject everything it meant to be Asian, and to try to put on this mask, this whole thing. And I think that was one of the things I tried to be, by the way, I'm an anthropologist, was to tell them, you know, you shouldn't lose your identity. I mean, you should, you know. And these were people between the ages, I guess, of maybe 17, 18, up to maybe 30 years old. It was clerical jobs. It was adult division, CPC, if you're all familiar kind of in English and clerical. And I think that whole question, that was brought up in this film.
Can we open up so I can see everyone else?
Thank you.
But going forward to your question about being in that model minority, particularly with respect to women, although I know that you have to be there, but why this is perpetuated. I know what you were saying about the rebellion, the formation of the activist groups didn't really occur until there was a balance in terms of men and women to the population. But you want to, since you did start so nicely with the background, go into why America has continued to see Asians as the model minority or the model immigrants.
Well, I'll start. One of the things that Asian Americans don't have during the war, and we just treat and one of the reasons, when I was talking about the history, they didn't really start families until then. So they weren't that many kids, and they weren't that many teenagers. So of course, you don't have a huge youth problem. And when the Chinese came to this country, they brought with them a social structure, and when there were a few families, this social structure could pretty much impose and control over the people. And so when there was problems, it was dealt with internally. And I think it's only fairly recent that the boundary of Chinatown sort of spread more from Chinatown to New York. Before, it was very much more closed. And I think, we have the women in sweatshops working tremendous hours under terrible living conditions. And you don't see that because they're in a factory building somewhere. And they're in a situation where they can't rebel. So you have the Asians being fairly quiet. And of course, with the Japanese Americans, the government also went to concentration camp. And so you have, when the war was over, when they came out, they didn't want to create any situation where they would be visible. They tried to kind of make it. In fact, you can tell from the children, I think the Japanese Americans have lost their culture in terms of language, much more than the Chinese or the Koreans. Mm. Yeah.
I say something?
I just have a story that connects up the sexuality of children and a model family thing I saw on one of these kids in the school. I teach in high school, which has a very highly developed advisee system. One of my advisors is a Chinese girl from Taiwan whose parents came over when she was 10 years old. And she's a junior in high school, and she is the model student at this high school. It's a small high school, and she is always in faculty meetings. The teachers talk of her as she doesn't break any rules. She never gets student words. She never always does her homework. Just terribly upset when she's late one day. All the other kids, by the way, have some of their assignments in late regularly. So nobody, she's the only one left. She goes through the deadlines. And she dissolved in tears when she was doing a weekly conference I had with her just 2 weeks ago. And I had a long, hour-long discussion with her just when she was blown out by sobs. And which was very similar to what happened to the woman in the movie. And she began talking about how living in American society and the whole culture, Chinese culture, breaking apart. And this is literally what's happening to the student life, which is just tearing apart. More so than I have seen with, for instance, on the Black student's lifetime in the past. To address even the original question about what makes Asian American distinctive from blacks is this concept of the family. Iglesias, that very nice student, that she, her mother picks her up from school at 3:15, and the driver won't let her go anywhere without her. She can't go, she can't date, she can't, and she can't even have girlfriends, because her mother is watching her like a hawk all the time. And she's expected to take on responsibility of the entire family. The family's in business. The mother actually is interesting. The mother was the first one to come to the United States, and she made a lot of money, and then the rest of the family, the father, and the rest of the family followed. Interesting person, but we talked about the elderly and the new family. And as far as the discussion about sexuality are concerned, you know, she's neutered. There's no discussion about sexuality, besides she's the only Chinese in the entire high school. And at Brooklyn, she does not live anywhere in the Chinese community. She's now isolated with her sister in New Jersey, in fact, in the community in the city. And she's dealing, she's has a terribly difficult time dealing with spending all day at school with white Americans and then going home, not being allowed to associate with Americans when she comes into the home situation. And she has to take, she has to babysit with her sister's children whenever her parents need an extra worker. It's a family business. And she wants to get a summer job, maybe she wants work experience. And I said, but Grace, you have all this work experience. You work in a factory with your parents. You do all the bookkeeping. You do all sorts of things. You call up all of the business calls. You do all this stuff. A tremendous work experience. Tremendous responsibility. But she said, well, it's just family stuff. It's real rigid family orientation, yeah. which is extreme, I think.
I just wanted to say something. I really enjoyed seeing the film, and I, you know, was crying through parts of it that were very familiar. I was born in Japan, Japanese, and I identified with some of the experiences, but I think the problem is that when you're talking about Asian, there's so many, there's distinct countries, and a lot of the things are very foreign to me. I grew up feeling very comfortable with my sexuality, I don't know, maybe. And I think in a lot of ways I find advantages to growing up in a Japanese home. You know, I think that's also, I was an American home. I'm very close to my family. I was encouraged in a lot of ways that I don't see Americans being encouraged in their homes. And it was really funny, like the first college that I went to, they offered a course and it was called Non-Western Civilization. And it's, I don't know, there's just like, for me, I mean, even though I was born in Japan, I've been to Japan a couple of times, I think I know something about Japan, but I would never claim to, I'd say I know a lot more about the United States than Japan. I barely know anything about China. Let alone, you know, a lot of other Asian, Southeast Asian countries. And when people lump Asian together, you know, it's just, it's really ignorant to me.
Because that's how Americans teach American history, and that's it. And I can recall being in college in a course that just dealt with the Middle East, and I can recall talking to the professor who was so appalled at how little of the basics that all of these students, all American born, knew about the Middle East. And I scratched my head for a minute and I said, you know, I've been in school now X number of years, and I don't think I've ever had a course that anything other than European U.S. history in my entire life. But I need to learn progressive school. It's just this narrow-minded Western perspective that doesn't
The problem a lot of times, I think, you know, I sympathize with the women's movement, but I think a lot of times, just from not knowing Asian history, say Asian culture, they speak about the Asian women, black women, Puerto Rican, Latin women, from a Western perspective, from American perspective, and they don't, when they say, they throw around terms like submissive or authoritarian, and it has a different meaning in the context of, you know, that culture.
I think another thing too, one of the things that fascinated me about the film was that my experience has been quite different as well. I'm Japanese American from Hawaii, I'm Sansei, third generation. And And I grew up in a context where the Japanese were not a minority group. That is, my social environment was quite different. And so the kinds of battles I was fighting were different, perhaps generational ones. But when I went away to college, well, when I went to high school for the first time, it was an Anglo high school founded for missionary children. And it's a private school.
Can I help you?
Yeah.
Why, too?
Really?
Yeah.
And I guess that was the first time, you know, that I had to confront the situation being the other. And then going away to college in Pittsburgh and living on the mainland, living in the East mostly, in the past several years, the whole experience of being the other, being a minority woman, looked at by others, sometimes with suspicion, sometimes patronizingly, sometimes rarely as an equal. It's, you know, it brings up so many complex kinds of issues that would be very difficult to discuss in just a few minutes. One of the things that fascinates me, and probably is because I'm caught in the situation, is something that has not been brought up this afternoon that fascinates, I think, a lot of people now, and the question of interracial marriages, inter-ethnic marriages, to be more precise, because there are a lot of marriages now between different Asian groups, as well as between Asians and non-Asians. And I happen to be married to a white American. And the question of chosen, you know, one of the things about being classified as the other is a high visibility factor. What happens with children? And I've seen, you know, grandchildren who are 1/4 Japanese or 1/4 Chinese, and the phenotype is almost totally lost by that point in time. If there's 3/4 Anglo or white, you can't see the Chinese, you can't see the Japanese any longer. And the question, you know, then arises, preserving cultural integrity and all that. It gets into all kinds of different issues. I'm not sure that I want to go into any kind of direction. But I wondered whether in your groups or in your experiences, those, you know, some of the related issues that I think are very contemporary looking at it from sort of the outside.
Is this one suit to the question?
No, it's not the same question.
That was a question.
Uh-huh. Sorry.
Yes.
Sorry.
We were just running out of time. Are we supposed to get out of here, please? No. Do people have...
I think we'll be there by 3:15.
Okay.
It's not very far away.
It was just at 1:23 after the workshops, 3:30 or 4:30 to close the session.
So we can
do that.
Part of it is in our grand. I didn't go to school with good, you know, Japanese boys and good Japanese families, that kind of thing. And my parents always hoped that I would marry a nice Japanese boy. And I realized it was idealistic.
I think that's a concern. There's a concern to maintain from the, some of the culture from our ancestors. And so there's a concern about marrying outside the world, so losing the culture. So if you feel that, I mean, certain people, you know, are bothered by it. It's very, I think it affects people by marriage.
It's very good. It's very strong. It's gotten better. In fact, we went through very shaky years, you know, between the time when I left home for college and probably after those few years of marriage. I look around me and I'm really appalled at the kinds of relationships that I see friends having. And I've gone through some of those myself, but I'm extremely close to my mother, which is No, there was always this kind of pressure that was more subterranean than anything else to try to marry within the my own ethnic category and all that. But once I told them, I didn't know how they would react once they told them that I was in fact getting married to a non-Japanese, I never felt any major resistance. I didn't get any kind of parental advice about how I may regret this.
Do you have any older brothers?
No brothers.
Because I have an older brother, and for my parents it matters to them that they're the oldest son. Marries it on.
Well, see, growing up in a situation with just two girls and no boys, and you know, no one carrying on the family in any way, made it a lot
easier. I think that's a really important view. I think of how you feel about yourself in this issue, and this issue has a lot to do with the family. In my case, I look at and watch a film and I'm extremely lucky to not have, you know, experienced that kind of rage, you know, that kind of death. And while my kids, I have an older sister. My mother's family, there were three brothers, and they were like, you know, all from the world, they were working in the and housewives and mothers. And again, my brother, you know, on her side, it turns so happy on the maternal side of the family. They're, you know, it's dominated by women. And I think, in this case, it's been a very significant the culture, and I think even American culture dictates that parents should treat boys and girls differently. And that's where, I guess, the experience of information becomes most acute for a woman to have. Whereas, there's no boy, parents is treated as children, you know, and it becomes a much easier problem to deal with. And, you know, even if it's a culture gap or something like
that. Well, certainly all their aspirations have to be, it's a psychological term, rechanneled, you know, to education for the girls now, because I had no brothers to compete with, and all of the things that they might have. I don't know, but my parents are not good at home anyway.
Yeah, one of the things that struck me initially when you were speaking was something about the sense of history. And you said you were particularly addressed Japanese and Chinese people as they came to this country. And I've recently worked in a coalition with some Filipino nurses, and I just sort of like come to just know a little bit about them and how. No, just sort of like trying to look a bit at the history and the things that stand on the line that you mentioned was the history of people as they came into this country but were not allowed to live in this country. It was the Chinese and that separation for so many years from family and all of what kind of message that sort of weaves through the way you react. And, you know, you talked about families thus starting later because of that separation. And then with the Japanese of the concentration camps. And I think there's some things, I wonder what the different experience was for Filipino or Korean people coming here, because it seems that with its great wide open doors of America, it also gives all these hardships for people that are trying to come in different kinds of ways. And there's something that happens with the migration here. Is that true also when you move to other countries, for instance, and you move to the European, Western European country? Are there the same kinds of problems there with assimilating into the culture or having those cultures? You know what I'm saying? I mean, it seems that there's something there uniquely that America puts a twist on it when you're coming into this particular country. Is it true also when it is migrating to other countries like that, that have different cultures?
I can comment on that just briefly. I lived in Europe for 3 years, and I felt that it was hard for Americans to be accepted there. I'm talking about Switzerland and France. Mm-hmm. I mean, in subtle ways. I mean, I didn't know what it would be like to be part of a large migration that was going to stay there forever, because I wasn't going to be American. It seemed like it was difficult.
Yeah, but it seems that, and I've spent time in and have friends in different Western European countries, is that many times the very basis of their society was one particular group, like particularly in Switzerland, and although there may be more influence of a French kind of influence in the south and more Germanic in the north, and there's real distinct feelings about those people being kind of different the way we feel in Europe, like different from the people who grow up in the south, that the basis of the whole thing was identifying very strongly nationalistic and Swiss.
Yeah.
America is a very different kind of a place, and it's made up of many more different kinds of people that make up that culture. So I expect more of an openness to the different people that come here. It shouldn't seemingly have to be as closed just because the very basis is made up of so many different groups. It's not as nationalistic being one way, one language, one particular history. It's a very mixed history of many groups. And yet it seems to put, you know, barriers up for certain particular groups.
But if you take a look at history, you know, the blacks have been here for a very long time. The Chinese numbers built California.
Mm-hmm.
And where are we today? You know,
mm-hmm.
You look at the economics,
yes,
you look at the
mm-hmm.
you know.
So right.
That's very
strong. Yeah, because why may not have a strong nationalistic identifying element? Money could be substitute for that.
Mm-hmm.
So that when early Chinese laborers were useful to the California economy, they were welcome in the sense that they were hired.
Yeah, they first came in as contract laborers.
Yeah.
But isn't there, I mean, this goes back to your question from earlier, isn't there a positive side to this whole picture of stereotyping that really hasn't been mentioned very much? I mean, stereotypes afflict us in all kinds of ways. I mean, we tend to think of stereotypes as those negative boxes, you know, into which we are pushed. But it seems to me among the stereotypes of Asians in America is that Asians are economically autonomous, that they've been very clever as merchants and small businessmen, that Asians are that Asians are very serious about education and have been successful with education, that Asians are good scientists and mathematicians and win an extraordinary proportion of Nobel Prizes in relation to their populations.
The problem is, that's not true. So when you have that kind of, for example, when somebody mentioned this for
students. But neither are all of these things true.
But on top of
that's not good because you know what? All the time when I talk with them, I have an Asian student, she's a straight A student. But she just might be one of so many, and you ignore the rest of the
people. None of that. She suffers from that expectation of having
There's also a difference between, say, Chinese and Japanese and Koreans who are from those other countries that come to school here and, you know, Chinese Americans and Japanese Americans. For example, I'm from Boston, and I would say the majority of the Japanese there are sons and daughters of doctors and professional people. And, you know, those are probably the people that are looked at as the model minorities, the good students. I mean, they come from a higher income bracket, but, you know, there are a lot of Chinese garment workers also there.
But the point I wanted to make was that I absolutely accept what you said, that the good stereotype, the high expectation.
I don't think there's a good stereotype.
But not only that, you have only to pick up the paper. It was very interesting last week in the New York Times, just a couple of days ago, yes, ran an article, you probably saw it, about Asian students in the University of California system, and one of the problems there that students were complaining about was that they were all being made to be computer scientists because Asians are all supposed to be.
It's just the wording in that article was also very racist.
Oh, it's incredible. I have another question. I don't know. It's directed to anybody who's an Asian or Asian American who's been exposed to academic community of Asia. I'm a graduate student in Japanese literature. And one of the things that I've always wondered about, I'm in the department at Columbia. The only Asians who teach in that department are language teachers. They're teaching assistants and lower. And everything else in the department is taught by white men, with the exception of one Chinese professor. And I was wondering what kind of experience one has of one's own tradition when it's all sort of, when it's the cultural imperialism that affects it so strongly, when it's all taught by white American men, what do you see of it?
I can respond to that simply because my mother happens to be a language teacher, and many of her students sometimes feel like they're downward to become regular students and get these people feel the same for American, or they go home with them. Whisper about how absolutely ridiculous the cases are, and they feel powerless to do anything about it. Very frequently, people who are teaching Chinese language are forced to do that because they have a hard time if you are saying special results to the SST. Well, clearly, you're not going to, being Asian, you're not going to break into the Russian or literature department if you want to teach that. And also there's also a question of methodology. And the European Parliament notices that every single scholar of Asia tries to use the Western methodology. And so that it's very, very difficult for somebody, for an Asian person, to say acquire the language competence to turn out academic papers, let alone developing his own methodology in doing research and whatever. So when you have to, when you get to a point where you have to borrow something else, you have to take Thomas Kuhn's structure of the scientific revolution and shove it down to the dream of rich. I mean, you have no choice but to play second fiddle to these.
Asian Studies Association meeting. I just went to one in Toronto.
Oh, right.
Yeah. You see the problem right there.
Yeah, it's
a problem. Yeah. Oh, it's going to be that way.
Even here at Columbia, I know, for instance, that the prejudice against scholars, I know personally two people that were young when they came over, and when they went into graduate school here at Columbia, they went to undergraduate school here, they were both Chinese. They went to undergraduate school and their grades were high and they wanted to go on to, into graduate school, which they did, but when it came down to orals for PhD, they were just, failed. Because I'm talking now in the early 60s. Now what is appalling to me is they just did not want that level, of Chinese to progress any further. This was at the East Asian Institute.
You actually have.
Okay, well, let me just say that, let's finish this point. Though what has happened, though, in the last year, they contacted both these people and have offered grants to come back and finish their PhDs just because of the normalization in China.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and because of their families were, who have some political power in Taiwan. It's just an interesting point.
I just want to make this point. I think as long as stereotypes are bought, it's going to, we're going to ignore the fact that Chinese American, Asian Americans are not in a higher position. They don't even go so far. They're put into a certain niche, especially the technical field. They're not in management position. You know, that they are kids with problems, that we do need, money for social, to help us alleviate social problems. All of those issues are going to be ignored. And so I think there's nothing good out of stereotype.
No.
Thank you.